Hellman on CliffCentral.com.
What's happening, Nick Hellman?
It feels so strange being on the other side of the interviewee chair.
What usually happens at this point? What would you do at this point?
I don't know. I would try and do like a story segue into a question. So okay. I'd be like, give me an interesting tidbit about your day. But I would segue that, and then hopefully they would have something, and then from there, I'd work a question in.
All right, so most interesting thing that's happened to Nick Hammond on the 9th of June 2016 thus far?
Oh, man. I was hoping you wouldn't ask that. Not much, except for the fact that I walked halfway here.
But you like to walk to a lot of places. You walk to Polokwane.
Yeah.
But the idea of walking halfway here, that's pretty interesting because that means at some point someone picked you up.
No, that actually did happen, yeah. But the traffic is a nightmare. Like, it's getting worse in Johannesburg. And I've only been here for 2 years. And on my way here, I thought that I was going to be late, which I didn't want to do. So I was in an Uber and I stopped it. And I started walking. And I walked for about 5-6 kilometers. And there was a lady on the side of the road who said, "Must you walk everywhere?" And I turned around and she recognized me. And she said, "Where are you going?" And I said, "Rivonia." And she dropped me off here. And then when I got outside, there's that like massive satellite outside these studios.
Yes.
That says like Jesus on it.
Yeah.
And I thought this can't be Cliff set up.
Bro, if it was going to be any place, it was going to be Cliff Central.
I guess that's all right, huh?
So 2 years into Joburg, you haven't realized by now that you can't just walk places. You still have this Cape Townian mentality of everything will be fine. It's okay. I can just walk around the streets.
Well, I feel like if I walked through 3 provinces and nothing too bad happened, we're okay. I think. I don't know. You know what's interesting is that, like, when I was in Cape Town, I really thought that I had a completely different perception of Johannesburg in its entirety. I was a bad Cape Townian, like, in every sense of the word, where I kind of thought that what Sandton and surrounds are, I thought that that was this entire place.
Wow.
And when I left, because I hadn't really come to Johannesburg at all growing up, and when I left and I got here, I was sad to be leaving my environment there, which was, I don't know if you know, like OBS in Cape Town, which is kind of, it's more on the sort of like laid back alternative sort of scene. And I didn't know about Melville, which is where I ended up staying. I didn't know about Bromfontein, and I didn't know about the CBD and everything that's going on over there. And so then I slowly started becoming a lot more aware of what the city was like and what it had to offer. And then I fell in love.
You're in love with Johannesburg. So
I am.
In 2 years, we managed to get you to convert.
I think so. I mean, for me, Johannesburg, now that I'm here, I've started traveling a lot more and I've started going to a lot more places. And opportunities have become available that weren't there when I was in Cape Town. Because when I was in Cape Town, even before radio for a long time, I was working in the music space as a musician. And I'd been working as a producer and I did a little bit of work like copywriting and stuff, making adverts. And through that, I never really got outside of Cape Town. My entire life was focused in the CBD and surrounds. And when I got here, suddenly opportunities to go and DJ in other parts of the country, in other parts of the world started happening, and the ability to sort of connect as a springboard. So I find that Joburg is like, there's a lot more energy here and it's a lot more alive.
Do you think that life is about loads of different exposures, and the more you're exposed to, the more you can figure out what you want if you don't let that intimidate you and freak you out? It's like the idea of traveling. The more countries you go to, the more countries you want to go to. Sometimes for some people, the more careers you try, the more careers you want to try. The more things you do, the more other things you want to do. For you, is it important to just do as many different things as possible, or do you limit it to specific contexts, like I'm going to do stuff in a radio space or a music space?
I think if you're in the media space now at all, you can't limit yourself to one thing. And especially because everything is changing and the platforms and avenues are opening up every day and consumers are moving into different markets constantly. If you're only looking in one space, in the space that you're in, at some point you're going to reach a dead end. And I also just, I never really had a plan, you know, going into any of this. There was never really an idea that I wanted to end up, say, in radio where I am now. It just sort of happened as a result of being in certain places and taking certain opportunities, because at that time I was willing to do almost anything.
What's interesting, I guess, you know, in the context of someone who has done radio for as long as you have, is that no matter what you're going through, no matter what you're figuring out about what you want and what you don't want, the constant thing that remains is that there's a microphone turned on. And how do you feel about that? That consistently you're just speaking about your human experience day in, day out. It's almost like a daily diary that you're forced to do.
It's weird. When you try and get like some perspective on it, it becomes a very strange thing. because I have always just sort of allowed a lot of my life to go out into the media and not necessarily know what that's going to mean. And as my platform got bigger, suddenly more and more people started responding to like weird, obscure parts of my personality that I had never, when you're doing radio and you're in a room, you're not that immediately aware of all of it. And the psychology becomes quite complicated because people start to prescribe ideas to you and about you. And when they see you in public, you're then expected to be like a certain way or a certain manifestation of yourself. But because I had always done it more, I think more honestly than a lot of other people that do what I do, it was easier to kind of maintain that. But then you do find that your privacy starts to disappear. I mean, like in my personal capacity now, I've dealt with like everything from a death threat to a stalker. And I don't even really play in the controversial space at all. So I can only imagine what it's like for people who do.
Let's talk about for a second everyone having an opinion of you and how you begin to manage that. I mean, you can't get taught in advance that everyone's going to have an opinion about you and people are going to like this and they're not going to like that. And how do you figure out what your voice is with everybody throwing perceptions at you?
I think it's just a hit and miss. You just put anything out and you're aware of all the perspectives because they come flying at you via like pitchforks and hashtags these days. But at the end of it all, you know, like I've never really cared. I mean, when I was in high school, 15 years old, there was this play that the drama teacher wanted to do that involved everything from like abortion and teen suicide and masturbation, which was the scene that I did. And so as like a 15-year-old at the school, which was a very traditional boys' school, so you can paint the picture for yourself, there I was on stage, busy pretending to jerk off to pictures of portraits that I'd stolen.
Jeez.
And, like, in doing that, I got so much satisfaction out of holding up a mirror and being autistic and being different. And that kind of, for me, became a thread throughout my life creatively, where I learned that the more you did and the more you put yourself out there and the more you challenged people, the more they were going to react. But there's a difference between, like, I mean, there are people that I've had fights with on Twitter, for example, and it gets messy and random members of the public join in. But then you meet them in person and they enrich your life and experience and you actually dig them. Right, and you actually learn something from them.
I mean, yeah, you seem like a really interesting guy, specifically because, you know, you can be speaking about something, but it seems like you want to evoke some kind of social change, or you want someone to have a serious consideration about who they are. And I mean, if that started at the age of 15, it would have started at the age of 1, 2, 3, you know, as you were beginning to grow up. What kind of kid were you?
I was a naughty one.
How do you know you were naughty? What did you do, Nick?
My parents told me. I don't know. We're quite free here. I can
Absolutely,
say pretty much
whatever
anything.
Whatever you want,
hey.
Yeah.
I remember there was, your parents tell me stories. There was, like, I used to run away from home every now and then. But what I would do is I'd pack a little suitcase, and I didn't wear clothes very often. So I'd get naked. I'd pack this little suitcase up, and I'd run down the road and get into the neighbor's house and knock on various doors. And then I would be like, hey, I've run away from home because my parents, they're not raising me the right way, and I want to live with you.
Wow.
And they would take me in, and they would say, and my parents were great people. Like, it was just, obviously, I had my own ideas.
Just siblings?
Yeah, I got 3 siblings.
Okay. Did they run around naked?
No.
Okay, just you.
No, I've got a younger sister too who's younger than me, but my brothers are like much older. Okay. And that informed a lot of my childhood. So I grew up sort of in the 80s and 90s because all the VHSs and tapes and hand-me-down toys and things were from them. But I get to these houses and my parents would like eventually obviously get the call and I'd have to come back until eventually they decided to get me a leash. I don't know if you remember these child leashes.
How old were you when this was happening?
This was like 4.
Four, 5. Okay.
Yeah. And then like other stupid things. I cut my finger off when I was 2 years old. I was trying to annoy my brother. He was in the bathroom and he was around 12, 13. So I don't know what he was doing in there, but he wasn't happy that I was trying to like cut up at the door. So eventually he just kicked it shut. And when he did that, it,
your finger went off.
Yeah.
Wow.
There's one more anecdote that comes to mind. I remember I was not allowed to go to Sunday school after a while because of like a series of incidences that I was involved with there. It was one where, and I thought this was hilarious, like they were doing a nativity play. So they had the baby in its manger.
Yeah.
And I went and got wine from communion and I poured it into the little basket. And said, like, I raised the attention that I think that it had gone, the baby had gone to the bathroom and, like, it made a bit of a mess. And they weren't happy about that. And then also, I went to my first, like, communion and I had a fake hand. So what I did is I pulled my hand into my sleeve and then put the fake hand just on, like, holding it out so that it looked real. And then when the communion bread was placed in my hand.
You were a little shit.
My hand fell off. Yeah.
You were a little shit.
And I said, look, I must be a leper.
Well, what do your exes say about you? What feedback have you had?
I don't know. I've only had one other serious relationship other than the one I'm in now. And we communicate relatively well. We don't often talk at all. But that was sort of wrapping up anyway when I was coming to Johannesburg. And subsequently since then, she has visited me on odd occasions, and we seem to be relatively amicable with one another. I think you'd probably get worse stories from my current girlfriend.
Yeah, what do you think she'd say about you?
She'd say I'm messy. She would say you want bad things, hey?
No, it's whatever like you want. Whatever she likes about
you. I think she thinks
like
I'm a sweetheart. I think I'm a romantic at heart.
You're an open book.
I know, relatively.
Yeah. Do you find it difficult to connect with people who take a little longer to warm up than perhaps what you do? Because you, it seems like you walk into a room, I can ask you anything, you're going to tell me. Not all people are that quick to give out stuff about themselves. Is it easy for you to connect with them?
No, not at all. But I feel that, like, there are a lot of people that I just don't get and understand types of people. And throughout my life, that's always been a recurring thing. But the second that somebody's willing to be open, I mean, I kind of have this overall idea that, you know, we're here by random chance for a very limited amount of time. And to be closed off limits experience and limits our own versions of reality and how we perceive where we are. And I don't see any benefit to that. And also, I think that, like, in general, a lot of people are very stuck up. And I think a lot of people are very, they stay very personal about a lot of things that I don't think should be personal. But I often have found it like, just even having people on the show, the second you create a comfortable environment, people are often willing to talk about far more things than they would have elsewhere.
How do you make that environment a natural one? Like, I often think this. Here we are, we're sitting in a room, it's at a table, there's these computers, there's these microphones, I'm going to switch it on, I'm going to switch it off. It's not the most natural environment. I mean, you work in a fishbowl at the SABC with people walking up and down. How do you take that and make that a real conversation?
I think you just got to listen to what the person's saying. I really, like, I had Yolandi Korki on 2 weeks ago, the woman who was taken captive by Al-Qaeda in Yemen. And it was the horrific experience where, you know, they let her out eventually and then they were busy doing negotiations, gift of the givers here, because our government, they wouldn't negotiate with the terrorists. Gift of the givers were getting involved. And they were about to negotiate the husband's release, but the US at the same time were also working on the release of a journalist who was held captive in the same camp. They came in too early and both of these two captives were killed, her husband, Ryan. So she came on the show and the idea was just to hear her story and speak about it. And what was interesting to me was the fact that she's a psychology lecturer. So you've learned all this stuff about psychology and the human being and the human mind, but what can you actually do and what can you actually use, if anything, when you're in the real face of some of the world's most evil people?
Yeah, it's not a textbook anymore.
And we sat down and we had the interview like I would with anybody else, obviously just with a great deal of respect. And halfway through when we took the break, she stopped and she just said, thank you so much, because I feel like you're actually listening to me. And I said, well, what do you mean? And she said, well, often I'll come in to do a show and the interviewer is not even looking at me or is looking at the clock to see when they've got to take their next break or loading up a song or checking a live read or something. And I think that maybe other people do it because they're nervous or they do it because they're worried about how it's sounding on air constantly. So they're always trying to like check back in their minds. But I think if you're sincere to a guest, the guest will open up.
In speaking to so many people and sort of, you know, in that context, you have to really cut through the hey, how are yous and get to the meat of why that person's there or get to the real truths of who they are. You got to zoom into their story 0 to 100 like a Drake song. I mean, what have you found the constant human truth through everything? What has every guest that you've had on or that you've spoken to about serious stuff, what is all human beings share in common so far in your 20 however many years of life?
I think it's that they want to be humanized and that they want to engage in things more than just what they're experts in. You know, I mean, if there's somebody who comes on, we had George Bezos on and we were speaking about, you know, everything that he's done is really well documented. And I was a politics major as well. So that for me, that was, it almost felt like recounting a lot of the history again. But the more that I allowed him to just open up and let him know that I'm not trying to stand on a podium here and I'm not trying to make this the Nick Hammond show. The more that I would do that, the more he would start to elaborate and the more he would start going into different avenues. And then we ended up, you know, speaking about the stuff that you don't hear and the stuff that you haven't read. So, like, yes, there was the day that he stood up and, well, he advised Nelson Mandela to change his rhetoric when he made that final speech for his sentencing. The difference between that famous quote, he said, you know, I fought against black oppression, white oppression, cherished the ideals of a democracy, and these are for which I'm prepared to die. And then the story goes that he was always going to say, for which I'm willing to, and George advised him against it, saying that if you put your rhetoric out like that at this time, South African government, that they may well want to give you the death penalty. So we all know this story, but the back end behind that and what he was feeling, those are the kind of things that I would be interested in more than, because I think that most people that want to know about him already knew what the textbook says and what the media had said about it. So you want to tell the human story behind anything.
Do you think you're impressive, Nick?
No, I don't. I'm very self-conscious of myself.
In what way? How do you know you are?
How do I know I'm self-conscious?
Yeah. What are you thinking? Are you self-conscious in this moment? Are you thinking about specific stuff? Are you?
No, not really. You're a very calming presence, and I'm not. I'm not genuinely dull. I don't think that there's much point in trying to be that self-reflective constantly. Do you think there is?
I don't know. It's an interesting time that we're living in. I mean, I know that you're massively passionate about South Africa. You're passionate about South African youth. Where do you think young people are at? Do you think that they're overthinking? Do you think that the fact that we have to filter photos before we put them on the internet is going to be damaging in the long run? Do you think we've become too dependent on likes on Instagram? I mean, where do you think that young South Africans are at? And that is a bit of a self-reflective question, because you are a young South African.
I think it's a complex question, because I think on the one hand, we as young South Africans have to be mindful of this hangover that we have as a result of our past, where everything becomes really complex. And unfortunately, you know, we do kind of have to be very sensitive about a lot of things that we do, because our experiences historically have always been so isolated. Mm. And they haven't had to meaningfully engage with things that affect us on a very real level, and now we'll go on to map out how we become as a society going forward. That's on the one hand, that's like on a socio-political scale. But in terms of like a vacuous people on Instagram caring about likes type of thing, yeah, I got into social media because I had to, and I was initially very reluctant, and I didn't quite get it. I've started liking it now because I see it slightly differently. But, I mean, my immediate friend group and where I've come from, we sort of never really saw any value in the amount of likes you're getting for something or the amount of shares. But this is on a personal level. I'm not talking about brands now. Mm. I'm talking about myself as a brand. I'm just talking about, you know, if you putting up a selfie of whatever and every time it gets likes, you're feeling some sort of a satisfaction. But I think that there's people make a weird distinction when they talk about social media, and they try pretend like it's some kind of a bigger vague idea. They try and say that, you know, that's like, oh, you only like the likes that come through, but those are people that like them, and it's just a form of communication that is digitized, but that doesn't mean necessarily that you can read too much into what's happening to humanity and whether or not we're degrading.
But these are things that you think about.
I do.
Yeah, you must do, because you articulated that in such a poetic way that
was
you
that
must
poetic?
Certainly
was
think
okay?
about, you know, where the world is at and what we're about. What's been the hardest day in the life of Nick Hammond thus far?
Oh man, the hardest day was, I was staying in a place in Illovo in Johannesburg, and it was on the Sunday we were to move out, and a friend of mine, along with myself, were going to be renting a house. Okay. And I'd, the night before, like, packed everything up. It was a very last-minute kind of thing, so I'd had a busy week and hadn't had very much sleep. But in the morning, I was going to drive out, and we're going to go to this new place. So my friend and I rock up at this house, and this old lady, to give you some background, had been staying there, and her daughter was renting it, like, going to rent it out for her. Mm. You know, say, like, okay, don't worry, you can go live in a retirement complex somewhere, and we'll rent the house out, and you can take the money from that. But this elderly lady was busy moving all her boxes back in the day that we were supposed to leave. And what started going on just through, because this woman was a bit senile, and like she was nuts. What started going on, because there was arguments with her. She started getting very irate and fighting and swearing at us. And suddenly we couldn't communicate with the daughter anymore. She was nowhere to be found. And we were convinced that we'd been put up in a scam, because already the money had exchanged hands.
Jeez.
And we just felt so comfortable in the relationship beforehand that, like, there wasn't even that much track record with everything that we'd done. So there we're sitting, and it's a house, right? So it's more expensive than renting a in a complex or a flat or whatever. And suddenly we're sitting there, and we're thinking, like, you know, we're both like 30 grand down the tube here. And we think we've been swindled. We don't think we're going to get that money back. And this is all while having not swept. It was slept about 24 hours. And I'm back and forthing. I've like got my lawyer on the phone. I'm desperately trying to figure everything out. And that went on till the next day, Monday. And that was, for me, the worst day of my life. Until, because we came in guns blazing. Like, we came in, you know, suited up, had lawyers, and we were going to, like, get to the bottom of the... I was going to phone Cop Blanche, you know.
It's going to be on 5-10 the next day.
Yeah. Get them to sort it out. And then it turned out that it literally was just that this old woman was a bit senile and had forgotten that she was supposed to move out.
That's not a terrible... worst day. I mean, it's up there, but I think if you've come through 25 many years with that being the worst day, it's a little unscathed.
I don't know. I've probably had worse. It just comes to mind. I mean, like, I was talking about it yesterday with a mate. So it's there.
Top of mind.
Yeah.
All right, dude, we got to wrap this up. You wrap it up. What is there left to say?
What do you want? I'm excited that I came here, dude. It's really like,
it's been
great
to have you.
I don't know if how public is it, but I really dig what you guys are doing.
Thank you.
I think it's awesome. And I think it's the future. And I think that as people that work in the media space, we're always looking for different ways to be more autonomous in our own right and to not have to necessarily be as reliant on bigger organizations or platforms. Not that those are necessarily bad things, but the more that we can create things like this, the better it's going to be for creatives.
Power. Well, you certainly are a creative. You're doing some unbelievable stuff both on and off the mic. You do this thing with drums apparently as well that somebody has to see. What do you do with the drums? It's very impressive.
I'm a musician as well, and I was for a long time before I was in radio. So when I DJ, I have like a live percussive set that goes with it, which
so
is
so cool.
But it's weird often because like people know you through a different avenue, right?
Yeah.
So people know me through radio, and I'll be like, oh, it's like 5 PM DJ, you're gonna come here and play like the top 40 or whatever.
Yeah.
And I produce a lot of my own music, and I play with the drums, and I've got this thing. It's rad. It's called a D-beam, which is basically like a it's like a hand sensor that you can map it to anything.
So cool.
If you're Ableton or whatever software you're using, this is what I happen to use. And so you can sort of play God because you stand over like a festival DJ set and then you hold your hand up above this thing and you smack it down. And as you do that, there's just like deep bass reverberations.
That's
or like
dope.
A trap drop. Yeah, it's really cool.
Jeez, you must be a horrible neighbor, but it's cool when you take it to gigs. listen, dude, thank you so much for stopping by. It's at @Nick_Hammond on Twitter. What else is it everywhere else?
It's pretty much Nick Hammond time everywhere else. So Snapchat,
fantastic.
Instagram.
Are you good at the Snapchat thing?
I'm so good at Snapchat, dude.
Yeah,
I'm like the best at Snapchat. I really think I am. But now I've learned that you can't like gauge your followers or anything, so I was a bit hacked.
Yeah, the mechanism is odd, but you can still see who viewed it. So, I mean, that's enough, right?
No, I guess, but I want to know.
You can't judge your success in followers, Nick. We had this discussion. Dude, thank you so much for stopping by. That there is Nick Hammond. You can catch him on 5FM weekdays between 8 and 10 a.m. for Hammond time. Nick Hillman on CliffCentral.com.